Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
Hello, I'm Taylor Hoffman, staff writer for Slug Magazine. You're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, lifestyle, arts, and events. In this episode, we'll be talking to two comic book creators, Toe Tag Riot's creator Matt Miner and Salt Lake City Strangers creator Chris Hoffman. Matt Miner is a comic book creator and writer of several series for Black Mask Studios. Miner is currently the writer for titles Liberator, Critical Hit, and Occupy Comics, including Toe Tag Riot. In March of 2014, Miner launched a Kickstarter fund to help him launch Toe Tag Riot, which ended with him successfully raising over $19,000. This series launched in December 2014. I had the opportunity to talk with Miner on the phone about Toe Tag Riot and his career so far.
Let's just start from the beginning. I mean, how'd you really get into comics?
Well, I got into comics, like reading comics. I mean, it's, you know, I started as a kid and I just kept reading comics as I grew up. Writing, I mean, I went to school with the intention of writing, but I never thought about writing comics, even though I read comics all the time. And I kind of got out of writing because I gave up. You know, there was so much rejection and I wasn't getting published, and you know, I was young, I was impatient, and I was like, you know, screw this, I'm going to, you know, drink all the time instead. And so that's what I did for like 15 years. And then once I sobered up, I was like, you know, maybe I should give writing another chance. And I had recently gotten back into reading comics, which I had gotten out of for about 10 years because of a house fire that kind of destroyed my lifelong collection, like burned it. So I was like pretty bitter about comics in general. I didn't want to, you know, build my collection again or whatever. So I was out of reading comics for about 10 years, and then I got back in and I started reading a lot of, like Scott Snyder was just hitting it big at that point with his run on Detective Comics and Gates of Gotham. And so I got back into it, and I had, you know, talked to him a couple of times, Scott, and he had said write the story that you would want to read. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'd had these ideas for comics for a while that kind of nodded to real world issues, you know, social justice type issues that, you know, I'm passionate about. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. And then I went back to school and I took a class from Scott. You know, I took it very seriously. I was like, you know, if I'm gonna attempt writing comics, I don't want to be one of those guys that says, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna write comics someday, and you know, 10 years later they still don't have any credits. I took it very seriously, and I'm very driven and focused and passionate about making comics. So that's where we are now. I've been in about a year and a half since my first book was published, and I have, I don't know, like 15 or 16 credits now. So trying to always do better and put out more stuff. That's about how I got where I'm at now.
Yeah, that sounds like a complete whirlwind, because in just a year and a half, 25 years that you mentioned previously, so much has happened. You're starting to write the comics that you've always had in the back of your mind, and that really brings me to Liberator, because was that your first publication that you really started to work on?
That was the first one, and that's the Liberator. Number one is the story that I workshopped in Scott's class. And it's, you know, it's kind of about gritty vigilante series where, you know, they're not fighting guys in capes and tights. They're taking on, like, dog fighters, animal abusers and stuff. It's an obvious nod to the real world underground animal liberation activists who do this kind of stuff. The people that I have immense respect for. And so I just, you know, I always saw them, you know, I see the videos of, you know, mink releases and lab break-ins and these animals being saved from torturous existences. And I was like, you know, these people are like superheroes, but real life superheroes. So I always thought that would make like a really excellent comic series, you know, one that would entertain and hopefully enlighten a little bit. So that's how Liberator came about.
Yeah, it draws attention to these really important issues that are always kind of on the edge of what people are talking about, and they're so prevalent in our everyday lives. Were you involved in a lot of these activist causes?
I was involved in the above ground legal stuff. You know, I worked for years in the campaign to shut down Hunting and Life Sciences. I worked on fur campaigns. I worked on horse carriage campaigns here in New York City. I worked on foie gras stuff for, about 12 to 15 years now. I've been working in some capacity for animals. For the last several years, I've been focusing on pit bull rescue of fighting dogs and chained up backyard dogs, things like that. It's less confrontational. It's less in-your-face street activism stuff, but you know, I find it's really rewarding to, rescue an animal and see that animal from, emaciated and almost dead to being rehabilitated to being rehomed somewhere, and being a part of that process is really where I found that I want to be.
So was it really risky for you to kind of pitch this comic, and was it already slated with Black Mask before the Kickstarter?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I was going to make Liberator, whether and a publisher picked it up or not. I would have just self-published if no publisher wanted it. What happened was I was looking around for places to pitch the book, and the obvious creator-owned outlet would be Image, but it's really not a fit for like a super mainstream audience. Somebody that I know on Twitter directed me to the Occupy Comics Kickstarter, which is an anthology project that benefited Occupy Wall Street and their various endeavors. And I hadn't heard of it. And I went over there and I saw this company called Black Mass Studios. And then I saw it was, founded by Brett Gerwitz from Bad Religion and Epitaph Records, and Steve Niles, the horror writer, and, mm-hmm. and Matt Pozzolo from Halo 8. I was already kind of like friends with Steve on Twitter, just because we're both vegan. And we both have a lot of the same, political views. And so, I direct messaged him, and I was like, hey, can I talk to you on the phone for like 5 minutes, just to run something by you? And that's kind of how I got into pitch Liberator. So I make a joke that, being vegan, like, opened up these doors for me in comics, but it's kind of true, it did.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you want to break into comics, it's being vegan, I guess.
Can you just kind of tell our listeners the story about Totegra,
sure.
It came to be, and all of that
sure.
wonderful controversy.
I had this idea of like a punk rock band, punk rock zombie band, and I started talking about it with the artist Sean Von Gorman, and we were like, let's do this book, we'll do a pitch. My thought was, I don't want to just do like another zombie book, like Zombie Apocalypse, Punk Zombies, whatever. My idea was, if I was a zombie, who would I eat? Because I try and live my life kind of,
especially as vegan,
more ethically. Yeah, and I try and live my life ethically. And it's like, well, if I was a zombie, I'd probably eat really shitty people. And so I was like, well, who are the most terrible people? Where there's like Nazi skinheads, there's the Ku Klux Klan, there's Westboro Baptist Church, there's 1 Million Moms, there's the Jerry Falwell Christian Coalition. There's all these like various hate groups, some of them under the guise of, Christianity or other religions. And those are the people I would probably eat if I was a zombie. So I was like, why don't we do a book about a punk band that's only cursed to become zombies when they play their music, and they decide to use their powers to kill and eat like the terrible people of Earth. And it can just be this ridiculous, over-the-top gore fest, kind of like a gore concert with, tons of blood and like ridiculously gory violence, but all told in like a tongue-in-cheek kind of manner. We pitched it, and I got picked up at Black Mask, provided we could fund the artwork. And so we put it on Kickstarter and really played up the angle of, punk zombies versus Westboro Baptist Church. Since they're, like, if you think of it as a video game, like Westboro Baptist Church would be Bowser, and then, like the Nazi skinheads and all these people, they'd be like the minor bosses. So you're working your way up to Westboro through this series. Westboro kind of glommed onto it and thought it was a good thing for them and promoted the book and promoted the Kickstarter within their own ranks. And they were like, you know, if geeks want money to help us show our signs, then give them money, you know. And we were like, okay, this is, you know, kind of unexpected and awesome. I mean, we figured on like a knee-jerk response, but we didn't really expect them to be like so supportive. It was later when they learned that in the band there's a gay couple, and they learned that the book isn't just clowning on them, it's actually promoting an LGBT positive message, that they got more upset. And they called me and Sean, the artist, insincere pervs, and said that the book would split all wide open. So that's the story with Westboro.
All of that is the first two pages of the second issue. What's more ethical than eating Nazi skinheads?
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of anything. If you're a zombie and you're hungry, you know, eating Nazis is definitely the way to go. Don't eat random people.
Yeah.
You know, like, go eat somebody horrible. Go eat a dog fighter, you know?
Yeah, rid the world and still fill your stomach. You never know.
I mean, if you're a zombie and you still have, you know, control of your faculties,
yeah,
then use those powers for good.
Yeah, the zombies in Toe Tag Riot are definitely more Return of the Living Dead than Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People were a little confused at first with the first issue. They were like, somebody actually said that. They were like, you know, I still don't know if this is more Return of the Living Dead or Night of the Living Dead. I'm like, how can you not tell?
Well,
they're talking, they're singing.
Definitely not The Walking Dead.
No, God, no. And that's the thing. The only zombies are the ones in the band, and they're only zombies part-time, you know? It's not a zombie apocalypse type of story. I think that's been done to death and kind of done to perfection with The Walking Dead, so why tell that story again? Toe Tag Riot is not meant to be taken seriously, where, you know, Liberator and Critical Hit are definitely more serious books, and Toe Tag Riot is supposed to be ridiculous, and it's supposed to be just fun.
It's a good supplement to reading Critical Hit, because Critical Hit is so intense and so personal.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Toe Tag Riot, you're kind of part of the audience and seeing, you know, all of these insane things happening, but you're still getting the message of, well, you know, these zombie punks are right. Don't be a douche.
Yeah. It's really not, you know, a deep message, and there's no... I saw somebody complaining that it was a hollow message, and it's like, well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, it was never meant to be anything more than just a tongue-in-cheek kind of, like, laughing at various hate groups and seeing what they looked like on the inside.
Yeah, for most people, they might not be able to get their hands on this one, but the Toe Tag Riot number 0, that was New York Comic Con and Salt Lake Comic Con, dealt with, like, some really interesting issues to me. It was all about people hating and being misogynistic towards cosplayers. And so, of course, the venue being Comic-Con, that's very, you know, obviously there. It might be tongue-in-cheek, but the message is still so obvious and people don't understand. And, you know,
yeah,
made me just want to rip people up, too. It was very satisfying.
Yeah. That number 0, I still have a few left on my website on mattminor.net. Yeah, that number 0 was a lot of fun because we kind of did a convention tour, Sean and I, the artist. And so we did it as a 2014 multiple convention exclusive, so we have a few left. But it's like, you know, we have Toe Tag Riot playing the after party of a Comic-Con. And, you know, one of the big issues and big problems of shows lately is people harassing cosplayers, thinking that because they're, you know, dressed scantily, that it's okay to touch and it's okay to harass. Mm-hmm. And it's just not. You know, when thinking about what we wanted to do for a show exclusive, it was like, well, why don't we take on the cosplay creeps?
I mean, that also brings up in my mind the idea of how to solve these problems, and you dive into a lot of different ways. I mean, in Liberator and Critical Hit both deal with how do you go about solving these issues of animals being, you know, totally abused, or like all the, you know, redneck hunters who don't give a shit about people. What do you kind of think your message was in these two books?
I think the message I mean, my intent with Liberator was to tell a fun story that, you know, people could enjoy whether they're into animals or not. Mm-hmm. I wanted to help change the dialogue about activists who do these underground type actions because they're too often portrayed as terrorists in the news media. And when, you know, these activists, they're not hurting anybody. They're not killing people. They're not beating people up. They're doing property damage, and they're saving animals. And I don't see that as a terroristic activity at all. I see that as a heroic thing. So I really wanted to help change the dialogue and show these types of people in a light that, you know, portrays them more as how I see them, as heroes. And I wanted to, you know, make people think. The heroes of Liberator and Critical Hit, they're just, you know, everyday people. They don't have superpowers. They don't have Bruce Wayne's money. They're, you know, coffee shop employees. They're college students. And, you know, they're and one of them's a record store employee. You know, they don't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of resources, but, you know, they still get the job done. So I just wanted to kind of show the real world side of the types of people that will put their freedoms and lives on the line to protect animals.
To see more work from Matt and read up on all the projects he's working on, you can check him out at mattminor.net.
Hi, it's Bill Allred, and while you've been playing with yourself, I've been interviewing people for the Let's Go Eat show. Here's an example of what I'm talking about.
Artie Fufkin, when did you start?
Actually, I was your second intern back in 1992. I was there from the freaking beginning, and you always scared me. You made me cry every freaking morning. Made me cry.
I did not.
I cried on the way home. I cried on the way there. Every day, I was crying.
Why?
Just you made me cry. I couldn't please you.
Download the Let's Go Eat show now. It's available on iTunes and the letsgoeatshow.com.
Chris Hoffman is a local comic book creator, the man behind the title Salt City Strangers. His love for comics started early on as he would shop at the Old Comics Utah shop, eventually becoming an employee and becoming a Marvel fan. He launched his own comic back in spring of 2013, giving away the first issue free at Black Hat Comics. The series focuses on heroes in Salt Lake City with local ties, both in their name and in their ordinary personas living in the city. This past September, Chris was given the chance to have a panel at Salt Lake Comic Con, giving the local artist a high-profile platform to talk about his comic. Today, I'm talking with Chris about his career in the comic. Why don't you just tell the audience a little about your comic and just the inspiration behind it?
Sure. No. Well, thanks for having me. But
thanks for coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Slug Magazine. So local independent self-publishing or small print publishing, I'm a huge fan of. So it's fun to be here. But so the Salt City Strangers is also a hyper-local comic book that takes place in Salt Lake City, of course, and it has a set of superheroes who are a cross-section of Utah culture. So there are superheroes who are members of the church, there are ones who are not, and they're of the LDS church, sorry, I don't mean to just assume that you know which ones I'm talking about. They fight crime and in a Utah style. So being in Utah, everybody understands where Utah is unique in very special Utah ways. And so the superheroes are all if the Avengers were volunteers and from Utah. So when we decided to start doing this, the inspiration actually came from the movie critic Roger Ebert. He did a review for Constantine, the Keanu Reeves movie, which is a very polarizing based on a comic book movie.
The classic, obviously. The real Hellblazer.
Right. Good stuff. It was, I thought, a really good movie. But he made a mention where he said that if you ever have a character in a movie that's fighting Satan or fighting demons, it's always Roman Catholics that are fighting them. And he just, as an offhand remark, said, well, where are the Episcopalians and where are the Protestants? Why don't they fight Satan, you know? And so I took it to the next logical step and said, well, where are the Mormons? Why don't they would, you know, in a fictional world where these monsters existed, there would be all sorts of different people and organizations that would fight against, especially if they knew it existed and they had some sort of special way to deal with it. Then I started thinking, well, what would that look like? You know, what would be, there's an episode of, the other inspiration is there's an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, second season, first episode. It's called Alice, I think it's called. or Alice Doesn't Live Here or something.
It's the one where she's got a name.
Yeah, it's her name tag when she works at this diner. So Buffy has left, and she has left the White Hats, all of her friends, and they're trying to fight all the vampires in Sunnydale by themselves, and they're horrible at it. Mm-hmm. And it is so funny to watch that episode at the beginning because it's so dramatic. There's a vampire coming out of the grave, and the original characters are like, oh, we got this, and they do that, and they're getting the crap kicked out of them. And then they, Oz at the very end has this, which is Seth Green, throws this stake, and it looks like, and it makes this amazing noise, and it just bounces off of a tombstone. And I'm like, I love superheroes and stories like that of people that have no business trying any of this stuff and failing miserably. So stuff like The Mystery Men is one of my favorite comics, Flaming Carrot, that sort of stuff. So we came up with these characters, and after some brainstorming, I had a cowboy character in my head for a long time called Deputy Deseret, which my wife named, and it was one of the most amazing names. I have people around me that are so much better at naming things than me. So my friend and co-writer Josh, he came up with the title of the comic, Salt City Strangers. But so then we came up with the characters that are all Utah themes. So there's the Golden Spike, who's the leader, the Gull, who is like a Iron Man type, but he's crazy. Den Mother, son of Bigfoot, which I made up just as a lark. I had no idea that like Bigfoot legend had something to do with like Utah culture, other than like people have just seen him around here.
Of course.
Yeah. So to add the tension into the story, they have a set of superheroes that are backed by the Catholic Church, and that's the Faithful Four. Mm-hmm. And so those people, they're much more well-equipped. They have more resources, and they're the ones who get all of the fanfare of what's going on with the thing. So it kind of plays at that like Utah inferiority complex that they have that some people have to the Catholic Church, versus because they can throw money at stuff where the church, like when we had in Utah, when we had the Olympics, it was a lot of volunteers who made it work. So that's what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be a set of Utah superheroes that are on the spectrum of whether they're very devout members of the LDS Church to having one foot in, one foot out of the door, and then of course their recruited member who is the Gull, who is not affiliated with anything. And as a matter of fact, he's a great superhero, but he smells of garbage, so he can't get onto any of the other great superhero teams.
Very much like the problems we have with all of the Seagulls here. Mm-hmm. So bringing more Utah into it sounds very much like that old Avengers initiative, mm-hmm. that I think I read about before, where everyone kind of has their group of volunteers, mm-hmm. but there was never a Utah one.
There was the Utah team in the canon Marvel one was mentioned offhand. Mm-hmm. They said, oh yeah, the Mormon team, and then you never saw them. And that was another thing that came out right around the same time. We said, what would that look like? Who would those people be? And so I laughed so hard at doing this stuff. But we have so much culture in Utah that's just amazing, mystical, scientific. I mean, it's just amazing the stuff you can grab from here. One of the public radio stations here does a thing called the Beehive Archive from the Utah Humanities Council, and that has a 2-minute story of these crazy events that have happened in Utah, like the guy who was stealing everybody's when he was burying people in he was an undertaker at the Utah Cemetery.
Oh yeah, I remember that story.
And he stole their stuff.
Crazy.
Yeah, and they banished him to Antelope Island. Just these crazy stories, and we love ghosts, we love monsters in Utah, we love comic books, obviously, because of the Comic-Con that's having huge success here. It's the perfect melding of everything here. It's comics, it's superheroes, it's Utah. So we're hoping that we're going to start with like having people in Utah interested, but we're hoping that most comic books, like, you know, they all take place in New York, right? Mm-hmm. So anywhere else becomes a exotic location.
Yeah.
So why not Utah?
Yeah, and so many people don't even know that Utah exists, really, and they don't know anything about this kind of underground culture. They only have this outside look of, oh, the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're kind of weird. And they don't really understand anything. I mean, I'm from Southern California, mm-hmm. and when I moved here, I had no idea what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
But now you walk down 11th East, and there's the Scientology building, mm-hmm. right next to, you know, a used bookstore, mm-hmm. next to another Mormon church. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So Salt Lake City Strangers really brings a look into the intersection of all of that culture that mm-hmm. we actually do have.
Yep. We try to celebrate Utah culture in it. People ask us a lot. They say, is it pro-Mormon or anti-Mormon? And we try to say Swiss Mormon. It is not judgmental. It is trying to tell a story about a set of characters who happen to be LDS and live in Utah and their struggles and their ideas and the way that they work with stuff, the way people do. So it's almost secondary to the story. It's not the primary purpose of the story. It is, these are normal people. That's one aspect of their life. It affects a large portion of their life, but it is one aspect of their life. There are also characters who are female, African-American, Native American, you know what I mean? They all, and how they interact with each other, there's not just a, there's a lot of official, like, the things that, that people would say, like a lot, I'm not LDS is the thing, but I am a Utah and like I've lived here my whole life. And so I was always invited to Utah things in the neighborhood, like playing church ball, if you've ever heard of that, you know, playing church basketball, mm-hmm. playing church softball. It was just something you did in the neighborhood. Like your Cub Scout group was always ward related, who you were going to see and stuff like that. So I am very much of culture here, you know, and I wanted to celebrate that. I wanted to tell the story of like, it's not one or the other, that Mormons are vampires and they all act exactly the same. You know, they're people, and there's a wide range of these people, and especially in Salt Lake. Like it depends on when you go out of state, when you go further south into the state, you know, that what it means to be LDS changes quite a bit. And so that's why we think it's a fascinating subject, and it's nothing that, we don't do anything that's like going to be, we're not going to shy away from anything that we would think is provocative, but we're not going to do anything intentionally like that. It's not that every other character and all the other characters are smart ones and the Mormons are the dumb ones. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm being defensive, but it is just a thing because people are very suspicious, mm-hmm. and rightfully so, because who would not be part of the church and make something if they weren't bitter about it, or if mm-hmm. they weren't like angry about something, and we're not. The three other co-writers are in varying degrees of either former members or current members and whatnot, and so it's, the point is to have this multicultural, multi point of view type group of people making a cool story.
Yeah, it's not a damnation of the culture. It's not necessarily a propaganda of the culture either. It reminds me a lot of Book of Mormon, Matt Stone and Trey Parker, mm-hmm. and just kind of presenting a slice of life with some comedy. Mm-hmm. And this time it's in a comic book form. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they also grew up not LDS, but were involved very much into the culture. So you kind of get that inner glimpse into it. Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating. I mean, we always need Utah's super awesomest superhero team. Mm-hmm. I've always been curious as to what makes a superhero in this comic. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you consider superhero, and what mm-hmm. makes them kind of different?
In general, or in the Strangers specifically?
Well, let's go Strangers first, and then your opinions about in general.
Sure. So in the Strangers, what makes them a hero is their heart. Is what I think it is, because there's all odds against them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing going for them in pretty much anything except for just a couple of little things, but there's everything in their life is pretty much strife. They don't want to be, nobody would want to do that, right? Like if you were really, like all night you have to go and hunt vampires and then try to keep down a job and, you know, like none of that is, but that's what's, I think is interesting. So what makes them heroes is their perseverance and their heart and the fact that they're sort of a family. Those are my favorite types of things, like superhero stories where it's a family of people. And you could tell the story about these five people without superpowers and how they interact with each other. And they could be starting a band, or they could be doing a small startup or something like that. Anything where there's something that this just happens to be that their startup is like a bunch of vampires that are trying to kill them. So that's what, for these guys, it's the fact that they look into the abyss and they're just like, well, you know what? I don't have any support. I don't have much support, but I'm going to try this anyway because I've got my friends by my side who can help me through this. So, they put themselves into situations. They fight for things that people don't even believe in. So like, it's not like they're on the news and there's like a leaderboard for how many, you know, vampires have been killed. You know, there's, even when the Faithful Four are on TV, they're sort of like a rock star icon. It's not like people really believe that there's vampires out there. They're just like, oh, these guys are neat and what cool celebrities and whatnot. So they put themselves out there doing stuff that nobody would really want to do for no thanks and still keep going.
Well, that's why Buffy does it.
Mm-hmm. So Spider-Man mm-hmm. does it. Those are my favorite type of heroes. I mean, and this is really weird. We've talked mm-hmm. about this a few times where it was like in my group, like what kind of comic books I love. Mm-hmm. And there's two types that I'm just gaga over. And one of them is where it's like old superheroes that have no business. They should retire. They should just go away and like relax. You know what I mean? You did your part. Just here's your gold watch and chill out. So like Superman Kingdom Come, Dark Knight Returns. Mm-hmm. There's also Watchmen. And of course, it's a litany of like the best comic books ever. But they're old people, like Night Owl in Watchmen. He's old, and in the comic book, he's fat.
Yep.
Like he doesn't even fit in his suit anymore. That is so hilarious to me. But he still tries as hard as he can. And at the end of the comic, he doesn't even really succeed very well.
No one really does in no. Watchmen.
But he did it, and he tried. And those are some of my favorite comics. Is when there's a bunch of people that just have no business trying to fight. If it's I struggle with like regular Superman comics because he is such a. He does what he does, and it's amazing, and he blows something up. You know, his interesting stories are the ones where his powers don't help him, or he's old. If it's something that he can just punch an asteroid out of the way, or whatnot, that doesn't. But that's why Spider-Man's actually of canon characters is my favorite, because he's gonna fail, and even in failing, he's still gonna win somehow. You know, it's either he's going to persevere or he's going to have some sort of thing out of it. Or if he can't save everything, he'll save something. You know what I mean? He's going to try his hardest. But you're pretty sure at some point he's going to fail and it's going to be bad. So those are the types of things that I think of as heroes. If somebody, if it's a story of capable person doing the things that they're really good at doing, I'm not interested.
Yeah, there's a big difference between Space Jesus doing everything correctly and just having Spider-Man having to choose between Mary Jane mm-hmm. and school buses.
Yeah.
Children.
Superman is good in other people's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America is good in other people's stories because then they're a moral compass. You can see how poorly your favorite hero is doing compared to the ideal. The ideal comes in and you look at it and it's like they're up here, you know, and your hero is down here, but they're still trying. That's what's interesting to me.
How's the reception for Salt Lake City Strangers been?
It's been warm, but it's slow. Mm-hmm. It's everything takes time, right? So we're on issue number 3, and if you look through the issues, issue 1 is really rough. We bootstrapped it. We had a lot of help from Black Cat Comics. Sam Rodriguez helped us out with a lot of just slave labor inking that he did on that book. We're still really proud of it, but it is rough. And you can see like the exponential growth of the quality of the artwork that's going on. And issue number 4 is coming out hopefully before Free Comic Book Day this year.
And
First Saturday of May. And if we're hoping we're going to have one done by then, but don't hold us to that. Our penciler's in Spain right now, and so he does it all traditionally, scans it in, we print it out, and then do some more traditional and digital on it. But for the reception, like when we have our events at like Black Cat Comics, or we've had one at the Nerd Store in Valley Fair Mall, people love it, and then we get emails and whatnot, and some people pick them up. They have a missionary out in the field, and they're collecting them so that when they come back, they can read these. Several people who are ex-members, and they love the story because they can see. We involve a lot of like the urban legends around Utah, so they can see places that they know. So if you know it, it's even cooler because you've been there. But if you don't know it, it's still a cool urban legend. We have our own here that are uniquely Utah. Is like I like to say, there's something always scary, and then something not scary about it. Like, you ever heard the legend of the Hoppity Lady?
I have, but can you give a short synopsis?
There's a few of these of this lady in white that haunts the avenues, Westminster College, mm-hmm. Salt Lake Cemetery. She was having a wedding, and it differentiates where this wedding was being held.
Newtonmaker
at Westminster College is one of the places that is said that this is that she's supposed to be at, but that she was driving to Wendover. So urban legend thing. Oh, she was doing something sinful. You know what I mean? As urban legends do, and so she was driving to Wendover and was in a horrible car accident, and so now she walks around like trying to get back to her wedding, right? Well, in one version of the story, that she's the Hoppity Lady, not the lady in white, is that her ghost is actually missing one of her legs, and so her wedding dress is gore ridden, and she hops, so she's only got one leg, and she hops along, and so it's like that
story is scary until she hops. Why is she hop? You know what I mean? And that's just that unique Utah spice on that story that makes it Utah and makes it horror and comedy, which is what we really try to get at the story with the strangers, is trying to make it horror, comedy, and drama at the same time, which all three of those are super hard to do in the first place. So we thought, why not try to do all three?
Well, it's been very successful so far. You've had booths on Artist Alley at the last Comic-Con, mm-hmm. and the year before that. Mm-hmm. And were you in attendance at FanX last year as well?
Yes, yeah. We subletted a part of a table at from Black Cats. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, everybody, all the comic book stores have been. Black Cats gave us our first being on the shelf, and then the other ones. So we're at Dr. Volt's Nerd Store, soon to be at Dark Soldiers and Haster Hobbies. As soon as I get them some copies, it's just been rough to get them printed. And then we're going to start marching into Provo and up to Idaho. And so it's this slow taking over of the industry.
Got to spread the gospel,
as it were. It's tough. Independent comic distribution is really difficult. It's never been easier to make a comic book. It has never been harder to get paid or to actually distribute it. So the way comics work is there's one big distribution network, right? And everything else is like these little individual like me printing them out in my basement and sending them out. Well, for comic book stores, it's really hard to have something extra to order from because there's one catalog that they order most things from. So it is the grand, you know, holy grail to get your comic book into that book. So but they don't take submissions until you have so many issues. And you probably need to know somebody there and blah, blah, blah down the line. Or you have to make your own noise at conventions and stuff like that. So we're trying all of these avenues. To being at the Comic-Con is a big one. Having the Artist Alley there is huge because of how many people come by and check it out. But then it also comes down to the point of hey, when's the new issue coming out? And since we're a two-man shop as far as the actual artwork goes, I mean, the writing goes pretty quick. We've got somewhere around 20 issues of layout, not detailed, but of storyline. So if the goal is to get to somewhere around 1,000 to 2,000 issues sold of each issue, and then it would start to sustain itself. That's when we could actually start paying artists what they're worth. We're doing something interesting here. We have a partnership with Broadview University, which is they have a sequential art degree program where they actually have artists who will people who are getting a degree in comic books. And so we're working with them. They do everything. They do a lot of stuff project based. So Garrick Dean and the writer Doug Wagner, who does Ice and did a really cool comic of Red, sequel to the Red movie. They're the professors in that program, and so we've been working together so that the students could actually do contribution work for the strangers or for other things as part of their coursework. So that's just another way. The grand dream of what we're doing with Hoffmangler Studios is to try to become an Image Comics type stepping stone for the Intermountain West. So we want to get more people who have their own comic book ideas and help them run Kickstarters and help them run their stuff and put it under our imprint. We have a new comic actually coming out called Craptionated Comics, and we're going to premiere them at this FanX. And what they are is it's 1940s comic books that are public domain, and we've erased all of the text in them and then rewrote all of the comic with hilarious results. So it's a lot, sort of a mix of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and C-Lab 2020 type things. It's going to be really funny. We have another comic coming out called Results May Vary. We've got a steampunk comic on its way. So we're growing. It's just taking a while to put all that stuff together. And like I said, so hard to actually get those in there. But we're plugging away at it just like our characters do. You know, we're just going to keep facing down that those overwhelming odds and like a Greek tragedy, easily seeing that this is never going to work. But good job, you guys. You know what I mean?
Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter at slugsoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, Henry Glasheen, and John Ford. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown.
Our show's theme was performed by Temples. Our main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design was by Kate Colgan. Thanks for listening.